passed on before this one was born. We ain't had no luck at all with our children. We lucky to raise him. He's the last stroke of exhausted nature. He gave his powerless laugh again, and Tea Cake and the boy joined in with him. Then Tea Cake walked on off and went home to Janie. Her husband can't do nothing with that butt-headed woman. All you can do is treat her cold whenever she come around here. Janie tried that, but short of telling Mrs. Turner bluntly, there was nothing she could do to discourage her completely. She felt honored by Janie's acquaintance, and she quickly forgave and forgot snubs in order to keep it. Anyone who looked more white-focused than herself was better than she was in her criteria. Therefore, it was right that they should be cruel to her at times, just as she was cruel to those more Negroid than herself in direct ratio to their Negroness. Like the pecking order in a chicken yard, insensitive cruelty to those you can whip and groveling submission to those you can't. Once having set up her idols and built altars to them, it was inevitable that she would worship there. It was inevitable that she should accept any inconsistency and cruelty from her deity, as all good worshippers do from theirs. All gods who receive homage are cruel. All gods dispense suffering without reason. Otherwise, they would not be worshipped. Through indiscriminate suffering, men know fear. And fear is the most divine emotion. It is the stones for altars and the beginning of wisdom. Half-gods are worshipped in wine and flowers. Real gods require blood. Mrs. Turner, like all other believers, had built an altar to the unattainable, Caucasian characteristics for all. Her god would smite her, would hurl her from pinnacles and lose her in deserts, but she would not forsake his altars. Behind her crude words was a belief that somehow she and others, through worship, could attain her paradise, a heaven of straight-haired, thin-lipped, high-nose-boned, white seraphs. The physical impossibilities in no way injured faith. That was the mystery, and mysteries are the chores of gods. Beyond her faith was a fanaticism to defend the altars of her god. It was distressing to emerge from her inner temple and find these black desecrators howling with laughter before the door. Oh, for an army, terrible with banners and swords. So she didn't cling to Janie Woods, the woman. She paid homage to Janie's Caucasian characteristics as such. And when she was with Janie, she had a feeling of transmutation, as if she herself had become whiter and with straighter hair. And she hated Tea Cake first for his defilement of divinity, and next for his telling mockery of her. If she only knew something she could do about it. But she didn't. Once she was complaining about the carryings-on at the Duke, and Tea Cake snapped, "Oh, don't make God look so foolish, finding fault with everything he made." So Mrs. Turner frowned most of the time. She had so much to disapprove of. It didn't affect Tea Cake and Janie too much. It just gave them something to talk about in the summertime when everything was dull on the muck. Otherwise, they made little trips to Palm Beach, Fort Myers, and Fort Lauderdale for their fun. Before they realized it, the sun was cooler, and the crowds came pouring onto the muck again. A great deal of the old crowd were back, but there were lots of new ones, too. Some of these men made passes at Janie, and women who didn't know took out after Tea Cake. Didn't take them long to be put right, however. Still and all, jealousies arose now and then on both sides. When Mrs. Turner's brother came and she brought him over to be introduced, Tea Cake had a brainstorm. Before the week was over, he had whipped Janie. Not because her behavior justified his jealousy, but it relieved that awful fear inside of him. Being able to whip her reassured him in possession. No brutal beating at all. He just slapped her around a bit to show he was boss. Everybody talked about it next day in the fields. It aroused a sort of envy in both men and women. The way he petted and pampered her, as if those two or three face slaps had nearly killed her, made the women see visions, and the helpless way she hung on him made men dream dreams.
"Tea cake, you sure is a lucky man,"
Sopty Bottom told him.
"A person can see every place you hit her. I bet she'd never raise her hand to hit you back, neither. Take some of these old rusty black women, and they would fight you all night long, and next day nobody couldn't tell you ever hit them. That's the reason I quit hitting my woman. You can't make no mark on them at all. Lord, wouldn't I love to whip a tender woman like Janie? I bet she don't even holler. She just cries, eh, TK?"
"That's right."
"See that? My woman would spread her lungs all over Palm Beach County, let alone knock out my jaw teeth. You don't know that woman of mine. She got 99 rows of jaw teeth, and get her good mad, she'll wade through solid rock up to her hip pockets."
"My Janie is a high-time woman and used to things. I didn't get her out of the middle of the road. I got her out of a big fine house. Right now, she got money enough in the bank to buy up these zigaboos and give them away."
"Hush your mouth. And she down here on the muck like anybody else."
"Janie is wherever I wants to be. That's the kind of wife she is, and I love her for it. I wouldn't be knocking her around. I didn't want to whoop her last night, but old Miss Turner done sent for her brother to come to bait Janie in and take her away from me. I didn't whoop Janie 'cause she done nothing. I beat her to show them Turners who is boss. I sat in the kitchen one day and heard that woman tell my wife I'm too black for her. She don't see how Janie can stand me."
"But tell her husband on her."
"Shucks, I believe he's scared of her.
Knock her teeth down her throat.
That would look like she had some influence when she ain't. I just let her see that I got control."
"So she live off our money and don't like black folks, huh? Okay, we'll have her gone from here before 2 weeks is up. I'm going right off to all the men and drop rocks against her."
"I ain't mad with her for what she done, 'cause she ain't done me nothing yet. I'm mad at her for thinking. Her and her gang got to go."
"Us is with you, Tea Cake. You know that already. That Turner woman is real smart, according to her notions. Reckon she done heard about that money your wife got in the bank, and she's bound to rope her into her family one way or another."
"Sop, I don't think it's half the money as it is the looks. She's color struck. She ain't got the kind of mind you meet every day. She ain't a fact, and neither do she make a good story when you tell about her."
"Hey, yeah, she's too smart to stay around here. She figures we just a bunch of dumb niggas, so she thinks she'll grow horns. But that's a lie. She'll die butt-headed."
Saturday afternoon, when the work tickets were turned into cash, everybody began to buy coon dick and get drunk. By dusk dark, Belglade was full of loud-talking, staggering men. Plenty of women had gotten their knots charged, too. The police chief in his speedy Ford was rushing from juke to juke and eating house, trying to keep order, but making few arrests. Not enough jail space for all the drunks, so why bother with a few? All he could do to keep down fights and get the white man out of color town by 9 o'clock. Dick Sterrett and Cootie May seemed to be the worst off. Their liquor told them to go from place to place, pushing and shoving and loud talking, and they were doing it. Way after a while, they arrived at Mrs. Turner's eating house and found the place full to the limit. Tea cakes, stew beef, Sopty Bottom, Bootney, Motorboat, and all the familiar crowd was there. Cootie May straightened up as if in surprise and asked,
"So what y'all doing in here?"
"Eating," Stew Beef told him. "They got beef stew, so you know I'd be here."
"We all like to take a rest from our women folks is cooking once in a while. So us all eating away from home tonight. Anyhow, Miss Turner got the best old grub in town."
Mrs. Turner, back and forth in the dining room, heard Sop when he said this and beamed. I expect you two last ones to come in is going to have to wait for a seat. I'm all full up now. That's all right, Sterrett objected. You fry me some fish, I can eat standing up. Cup of coffee on the side.
Sling me up a plate of that stew beef with some coffee too, please, ma'am. Sterrett is just as drunk as I is, and if he can eat standing up, I can do the same. Pretty soon, the girls that was waiting table for Mrs. Turner brought in the order, and Sterrett took his fish and coffee in his hands and stood there. Kudeme wouldn't take his off the tray like he should have. No, you hold it for me, baby, and let me eat, he told the waitress. He took the fork and started to eat off the tray.
Nobody ain't got no time to hold your grub up in front of your face, she told Kudeme. Yeah, take it yourself.
You was right, Kudeme told her. Give me it here. Sopkin, give me his cheer.
You's a lie, Sop retorted. I ain't through, and I ain't ready to get up.
Kudeme tried to shove Sop out of the chair, and Sop resisted. That brought on a whole lot of shoving and scrambling, and coffee got spilt on Sop. So he aimed at Kudeme with a saucer and hit Bootney. Bootney threw his thick coffee cup at Kudeme and just missed stew beef, so it got to be a big fight. Mrs. Turner came running in out of the kitchen. Then T-Cake got up and caught hold of Kudeme by the collar.
Look here, y'all don't come in here and raise no disturbance in the place. Miss Turner is too nice a woman for that. In fact, she's more nicer than anybody else on the muck.
Mrs. Turner beamed on TK.
I know that. All of us knows it. But I don't give a damn how nice she is. I got to have some place to sit down and eat. Sop ain't gonna bluff me neither. Let him fight like a man. Take your hands off me, TK.
No, I won't neither. You coming on out of the place.
Who's going to make me come out?
Me, that's who. I'm in here, ain't I? If you don't want to respect nice people like Mrs. Turner, God knows you're going to respect me. Come on out of here, Cooten May.
Turn him loose, T.K., Sterrett shouted. That's my buddy. Coming here to give him. He ain't going nowhere until I go myself.
Well, both of you is going, T.K. shouted and fastened down on Cooten May. Dockery grabbed Sterrett, and they razzled all over the place. Some more joined in, and dishes and tables began to crash. Mrs. Turner saw with dismay that Tea Cake's taking them out was worse than letting them stay in. She ran out in the back somewhere and got her husband to put a stop to things. He came in, took a look, and squinched down into a chair in an off corner and didn't open his mouth. So Mrs. Turner struggled into the mass and caught Tea Cake by the arm.
That's all right, Tea Cake. I appreciate your help, but leave him alone.
No, sir, Miss Turner. I'm going to show them they can't come running over nice people and loud talk no place whilst I'm around. They're going out of here.
By that time, everybody in and around the place was taking sides. Somehow or other, Mrs. Turner fell down, and nobody knew she was down there under all the fighting and broken dishes and crippled up tables and broken off chair legs and window panes and such things. It got so that the floor was knee deep with something no matter where you put your foot down. But T.K. kept right on until Kudeme told him,
I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Y'all tried to tell me right, and I wouldn't listen. I ain't mad with nobody. Just to show y'all I ain't mad, me and Sterrett going to buy everybody something to drink. Old man Vickers, I got some good goondick over around Perky. Come on, everybody, let's go get our knots charged.
Everybody got in a good humor and left. Mrs. Turner got up off the floor, hollering for the police.
Look at her place. How come nobody didn't call the police?
Then she found out that one of her hands was all stepped on and her fingers were bleeding pretty pert. Two or three people who were not there during the fracas poked their heads in at the door to sympathize, but that made Mrs. Turner madder. She told them where to go in a hurry. Then she saw her husband sitting over there in a corner with his long, bony legs all crossed up, smoking his pipe.
What kind of man is you, Turner? You say these no-count niggers come in there and break up my place? How can you sit and see your wife all trampled on? You ain't no kind of man at all. You seen that tea cake shoving me down? Yes, you did. You ain't raised your hand to do nothing about it.
Turner removed his pipe and answered,
Yeah, and you see how I did swell up, too, didn't you? You tell tea cake he better be careful I don't swell up again.
At that, Turner crossed his legs the other way and kept right on smoking his pipe. Mrs. Turner hit at him the best she could with her hurt hand and then spoke her mind for half an hour.
It's a good thing my brother wasn't around here when it happened. Knew he would have killed somebody. My son, too. They got some manhood about them. We's going back to Miami, where folks is civilized.
Nobody told her right away that her son and brother were already on their way after pointed warnings outside the cafe. No time for fooling around. They were hurrying into Palm Beach. She'd find out about that later on. Monday morning, Kudeme and Sterrett stopped by and begged her pardon profusely and gave her $5 apiece. Then Kudeme said,
They tell me I was drunk Saturday night and clowning down. I don't remember a thing about it, but when I get to peeping through my liquor, they tell me I'm a mess.
Since Tea Cake and Janie had friended with the Bahamian workers in the Glades, they, the Saws, had been gradually drawn into the American crowd. They quit hiding out to hold their dances when they found that their American friends didn't laugh at them as they feared. Many of the Americans learned to jump and liked it as much as the Saws. So they began to hold dances night after night in the quarters, usually behind Tea Cake's house. Often now, Tea Cake and Janie stayed up so late at the fire dances that Tea Cake would not let her go with him to the field. He wanted her to get her rest. So she was home by herself one afternoon when she saw a band of Seminoles passing by, the men walking in front and the laden, stolid women following them like burros. She had seen Indians several times in the Glades, in twos and threes, but this was a large party. They were headed towards the Palm Beach Road and kept moving steadily. About an hour later, another party appeared and went the same way. Then another just before sundown. This time, she asked where they were all going, and at last one of the men answered her.
Going to high ground. Saw grass bloom. Hurricane coming.
Everybody was talking about it that night. But nobody was worried. The fire dance kept up till nearly dawn. The next day, more Indians moved east, unhurried but steady. Still a blue sky and fair weather. Beans running fine, prices good, so the Indians could be, must be, wrong. You couldn't have a hurricane when you're making $7 and $8 a day picking beans. Indians are dumb anyhow, always were. Another night of Stew Beef making dynamic subtleties with his drum and living sculptural grotesques in the dance. Next day, no Indians passed at all. It was hot and sultry, and Janie left the field and went home. Morning came without motion. The winds, to the tiniest lisping baby breath, had left the earth. Even before the sun gave light, dead day was creeping from bush to bush, watching man. Some rabbits scurried through the quarters going east. Some possums slunk by, and their route was definite, one or two at a time, then more. By the time the people left the fields, the procession was constant. Snakes, rattlesnakes, began to cross the quarters. The men killed a few, but they could not be missed from the crawling horde. People stayed indoors until daylight. Several times during the night, Janie heard the snort of big animals like deer. Once the muted voice of a panther, going east and east. That night, the palm and banana trees began that long-distance talk with rain. Several people took fright and picked up and went into Palm Beach anyway. 1,000 buzzards held a flying meet and then went above the clouds and stayed. One of the Bahamian boys stopped by Tea Cake's house in a car and hollered. Tea Cake came out, throwing laughter over his shoulder into the house.
Hello, Tea Cake.
Hello, Lars. You leaving, I see.
Yeah, man. You and Janie want to go? I wouldn't give nobody else a chance at a seat till I found out if you all had any way to go.
Thank you ever so much, Lars, but we about decided to stay.
The crow gone up, man?
That ain't nothing. You ain't seen the boss man go up here, is you? Well, all right now. Man, the money's too good on the muggers. Liable to fare off by tomorrow. I wouldn't leave if I was you.
My uncle come for me. He say hurricane warning out in Palm Beach. Not so bad there, but man, this muck is too low and that big leg is liable to bust.
Oh, no, man. Some boys in there now talking about it. Some of them been in the Glades for years. Tain't nothing but a little blow. You lose the whole day tomorrow trying to get back out here.
The Indian gone east, man, is dangerous.
They don't always know. Indians don't know much of nothing, to tell the truth, else they'd own this country still. The white folks ain't gone nowhere. They ought to know if it's dangerous. You better stay here, man. Big jump and dance tonight, right here when it fell off.
Lias hesitated and started to climb out, but his uncle wouldn't let him.
This time tomorrow, you're going to wish you follow Crow.
He snorted and drove off. Lias waved back to them gaily.
If I never see you no more on Earth, I'll meet you in Africa.
Others hurried east, like the Indians and rabbits and snakes and coons. But the majority sat around, laughing and waiting for the sun to get friendly again. Several men collected at Tea Cake's house and sat around stuffing courage into each other's ears. Janie baked a big pan of beans and something she called sweet biscuits, and they all managed to be happy enough. Most of the great flame throwers were there, and naturally handling Big John the Conqueror and his works, how he had done everything big on Earth, then went up to heaven without dying at all, went up there picking a guitar, and got all the angels doing the ring shout round and round the throne. Then everybody but God and old Peter flew off on a flying race to Jericho and back, and John the Conqueror won the race, went on down to hell, beat the old devil, and passed out ice water to everybody down there. Somebody tried to say that it was a mouth organ harp that John was playing, but the rest of them would not hear that. Don't care how good anybody could play a harp, God would rather to hear a guitar. That brought them back to Tea Cake.
How come he couldn't hit that box of liquor, too?
Well, all right now, make us know it.
When it got good to everybody, Muck Boy woke up and began to chant with the rhythm, and everybody bore down on the last word of the line.
Your mama don't wear no drawers. I seen them when she took them off. She soaked them in alcohol. She sold them to the Santa Claus. He told her 'twas against the law to wear them dirty drawers.
Then Muck Boy went crazy through the feet and danced himself and everybody else crazy. When he finished, he sat back down on the floor and went to sleep again. Then they got to playing Florida Flip and Coon Can. Then it was dice. Not for money. This was a show-off game. Everybody posing his fancy shots. As always, it broiled down to Tea Cake and Motorboat. Tea Cake with his shy grin, and Motorboat with his face like a little black cherubim just from a church tower, doing amazing things with anybody's dice. The others forgot the work and the weather, watching them throw. It was art. $1,000 a throw in Madison Square Garden wouldn't have gotten any more breathless suspense. It would have just been more people holding in. After a while, somebody looked out and said,
"It ain't getting no fairer out there. Believe I'll get on over to my shack."
Motorboat and Tea Cake were still playing, so everybody left them at it. Sometime that night, the winds came back. Everything in the world had a strong rattle, sharp and short, like stew beef, vibrating the drum head near the edge with his fingers. By morning, Gabriel was playing the deep tones in the center of the drum. So when Janie looked out of her door, she saw the drifting mists gathered in the west, that cloud field of the sky, to arm themselves with thunders and march forth against the world. Louder and higher and lower and wider the sound and motion spread, mounting, sinking, darkening. It woke up old Okeechobee, and the monster began to roll in his bed. Began to roll and complain like a peevish world on a grumble. The folks in the quarters and the people in the big houses further around the shore heard the big lake and wondered. The people felt uncomfortable but safe because there were the sea walls to chain the senseless monster in his bed. The folks let the people do the thinking. If the castles thought themselves secure, the cabins needn't worry. Their decision was already made, as always. Chink up your cracks, shiver in your wet beds, and wait on the mercy of the Lord. The boss man might have the thing stopped before morning anyway. It is so easy to be hopeful in the daytime when you can see the things you wish on. But it was night. It stayed night. Night was striding across nothingness with the whole round world in his hands. A big burst of thunder and lightning that trampled over the roof of the house. So Tea Cake and Mota stopped playing. Mota looked up in his angel-looking way and said, "Big Massa, draw him chair upstairs." "I'm glad y'all stopped that crap shooting, even if it wasn't for money," Janie said. "Old Massa's doing his work now. Us ought to keep quiet." They huddled closer and stared at the door. They just didn't use another part of their bodies, and they didn't look at anything but the door. The time was past for asking the white folks what to look for through that door. Six eyes were questioning God. Through the screaming wind, they heard things crashing and things hurtling and dashing with unbelievable velocity. A baby rabbit, terror-ridden, squirmed through a hole in the floor and squatted off there in the shadows against the wall, seeming to know that nobody wanted its flesh at such a time. And the lake got madder and madder, with only its dikes between them and him. In a little wind lull, Tea Cake touched Janie and said, "I reckon you wish now you had have stayed in your big house, away from such as this, don't you?"
"No."
"No?"
"Yeah, no. People don't die till the time come, nohow. Don't care where you at. I'm with my husband in a storm, that's all."
"Thank you, ma'am. But supposing you was to die now, you wouldn't get mad at me for dragging you here?"
"No.
We've been together around 2 years. If you can see the light at daybreak, you don't care if you die at dusk. It's so many people never see the light at all." I was fumbling around, and God opened the door. He dropped to the floor and put his head in her lap. "Well then, Janie, you meant what you didn't say, 'cause I never knowed you were so satisfied with me like that. I kinda thought." The wind came back with triple fury and put out the light for the last time. They sat in company with others in other shanties, their eyes straining against crude walls and their souls asking if he meant to measure their puny might against his. They seemed to be staring at the dark, but their eyes were watching God. As soon as Tea Cake went out, pushing wind in front of him, he saw that the wind and water had given life to lots of things that folks think of as dead, and given death to so much that had been living things. Water everywhere. Stray fish swimming in the yard. 3 inches more, and the water would be in the house. Already in some. He decided to try to find a car to take them out of the glades before worse things happen. He turned back to tell Janie about it so she could be ready to go. "Get our insurance papers together, Janie. I'll tote my box myself and things like that." "You got all the money at the dresser drawer already?" "No. Get it quick and cut a piece off the tablecloth to wrap it up in. Us liable to get wet to our necks. Cut a piece of that oilcloth quick for our papers. We got to go if it ain't too late. The dish can't bear it out no longer." He snatched the oilcloth off the table and took out his knife. Janie held it straight while he slashed off a strip. "But tea cake, it's too awful out there. Maybe it's better to stay here in the wet than it is to try to..." He stunned the argument with half a word. "Fix," he said, and fought his way outside. He had seen more than Janie had. Janie took a big needle and ran up a longish sack, found some newspaper, and wrapped up the paper money and papers and thrust them in and whipped over the open end with her needle. Before she could get it thoroughly hidden in the pocket of her overalls, Tea Cake burst in again. "'Tain't no cars, Janie."
"I thought not. What we gonna do now?"
"We got to walk."
"In all this weather, Tea Cake? I don't believe I could make it up to quarters."
"Oh, yeah, you can. Me and you and Motorboat can all lock arms and hold one another down. Eh, Motor?" "He's sleep on the bed in yonder," Janie said. TK called without moving. "Motorboat, you better get up from there. Hell done broke loose in Georgia this minute. How can you sleep at a time like this? Water knee deep in the yard." They stepped out in water almost to their buttocks and managed to turn east. TK had to throw his box away, and Janie saw how it hurt him. Dodging flying missiles, floating dangers, avoiding stepping in holes, and warmed on the wind, now at their backs, until they gained comparatively dry land. They had to fight to keep from being pushed the wrong way and to hold together. They saw other people like themselves struggling along, a house down, here and there frightened cattle, but above all, the drive of the wind and the water. And the lake. Under its multiplied roar could be heard a mighty sound of grinding rock and timber and a wail. They looked back, saw people trying to run in raging waters and screaming when they found they couldn't. A huge barrier of the makings of the dike to which the cabins had been added was rolling and tumbling forward. 10 feet higher, as far as they could see, the muttering wall advanced before the braced-up waters like a road crusher on a cosmic scale. The monstropolous beast had left his bed. The 200-mile-an-hour wind had loosed his chains. He seized hold of his dikes and ran forward until he met the quarters, uprooted them like grass, and rushed on after his supposed-to-be conquerors, rolling the dikes, rolling the houses, rolling the people in the houses, along with other timbers. The sea was walking the earth with a heavy heel. "The lake is coming!" Tea Cake gasped. "The lake!" In amazed horror from Motorboat. "The lake is coming behind us!" Janie shuddered. "Us can't fly! But we still can run!" Tea Cake shouted, and they ran. The gushing water ran faster. The great body was held back, but rivers spouted through fissures in the rolling wall and broke like day. The three fugitives ran past another line of shanties that topped a slight rise and gained a little. They cried out as best they could, "The lake is coming!" And barred doors flew open, and others joined them in flight, crying the same as they went, "The lake is coming!" And the pursuing waters growled and shouted ahead, "Yes, I'm coming!" And those who could fled on. They made it to a tall house on a hump of ground, and Janie said, "Let's stop here. I can't make it no further. I'm done give out." "All of us is done give out," Tea Cake corrected. "We's going inside out this weather, kill or cure." He knocked with the handle of his knife while they leaned their faces and shoulders against the wall. He knocked once more. Then he and Motorboat went round to the back and forced a door. Nobody there.
"These people had more sense than I did,"
Teacake said as they dropped to the floor and lay there panting.
"I sort of went on with lies, like he asked me."
"You didn't know," Janie contended. "And when you don't know, you just don't know. The storms might not have come, sure enough."
They went to sleep promptly, but Janie woke up first. She heard the sound of rushing water and sat up.
"Teacake! Motorboat! The lake is coming!"
The lake was coming on, slower and wider, but coming. It had trampled on most of its supporting wall and lowered its front by spreading. But it came, muttering and grumbling onward like a tired mammoth, just the same.
"This is a high, tall house. Maybe it won't reach here at all," Janie counseled. "And if it do, maybe it won't reach to the upstairs part."
"Janie, Lake Okeechobee is 40 miles wide and 60 miles long. That's a whole heap of water. If this wind is shoving that whole lake this away, this house ain't nothing to swallow. Us better go. Motorboat."
"What you want, man? The lake is coming."
"Huh? No, it ain't."
"Yes, it is so coming. Listen, you can head way off. It can just come on. I'll wait right here."
"Oh, get up, Motorboat. Let's make it to the Palm Beach Road. That's on a fill. We's pretty safe there."
"I'm safe here, man. Go ahead if you want to. I'm sleepy."
"What you gonna do if the lake reach here?"
"Go upstairs. Suppose it come up there. Swim, man. That's all."
"Well, goodbye, Motorboat. Everything's pretty bad, you know. Us might get missed in one another. You sure is a grand friend for a man to have. Goodbye, Teacake. Y'all ought to stay and sleep, man. No using going on and leaving me like this."
"We don't wanna. Come on with us. It might be nighttime when the water hit you up in the air. That's how come I won't stay. Come on, man. Teacake. I got to have my sleep. Definitely. Goodbye, Aunt Mota. I wish you all the luck. Going on to Nassau for that visit with you when all this is over. Definitely, Teacake. My mama's house is yours."
Teacake and Janie were some distance from the house before they struck serious water. Then they had to swim a distance, and Janie could not hold up more than a few strokes at a time. So Teacake bore her up till finally they hit a ridge that led on towards the fill. It seemed to him the wind was weakening a little, so he kept looking for a place to rest and catch his breath. His wind was gone. Janie was tired and limping, but she had not had to do that hard swimming in the turbulent waters, so Teacake was much worse off. But they couldn't stop. Gaining the fill was something, but it was no guarantee. The lake was coming. They had to reach the 6-mile bridge. It was high and safe, perhaps. Everybody was walking the fill, hurrying, dragging, falling, crying, calling out names hopefully and hopelessly. Wind and rain beating on old folks and beating on babies. Teacake stumbled once or twice in his weariness, and Janie held him up. So they reached the bridge at 6-mile Bend and thought to rest. But it was crowded. White people had preempted that point of elevation, and there was no more room. They could climb up one of its high sides and down the other, that was all. Miles further on, still no rest. They passed a dead man in a sitting position on a hummock, entirely surrounded by wild animals and snakes. Common danger made common friends. Nothing sought a conquest over the other. Another man clung to a cypress tree on a tiny island. A tin roof of a building hung from the branches by electric wires, and the wind swung it back and forth like a mighty axe. The man dared not move a step to his right, lest this crushing blade split him open. He dared not step left, for a large rattlesnake was stretched full length with his head in the wind. There was a strip of water between the island and the fill, and the man clung to the tree and cried for help. "The snake won't bite you," Tea Cake yelled to him. "He's scared to go into a coral, scared he'll be blown away. Step round that side and swim off." Soon after that, Tea Cake felt he couldn't walk anymore, not right away. So he stretched alongside of a road to rest. Janie spread herself between him and the wind, and he closed his eyes and let the tiredness seep out of his limbs. On each side of the fill was a great expanse of water, like lakes, water full of things living and dead, things that didn't belong in water. As far as the eye could reach, water and wind playing upon it in fury. A large piece of tar paper roofing sailed through the air and scudded along the fill until it hung against a tree. Janie saw it with joy. That was the very thing to cover Tea Cake with. She could lean against it and hold it down. The wind wasn't quite so bad as it was anyway. The very thing. Poor Tea Cake. She crept on hands and knees to the piece of roofing and caught hold of it by either end. Immediately the wind lifted both of them, and she saw herself sailing off the fill to the right, out and out over the lashing water. She screamed terribly and released the roofing, which sailed away as she plunged downward into the water. "Tea Cake!" He heard her and sprang up. Janie was trying to swim, but fighting water too hard. He saw a cow swimming slowly towards the fill in an oblique line. A massive-built dog was sitting on her shoulders and shivering and growling. The cow was approaching Janie. A few strokes would bring her there. "Make it to the cow and grab hold of her tail. Don't use your feet. Just your hands is enough. That's right. Come on." Janie achieved the tail of the cow and lifted her head up along the cow's rump as far as she could above water. The cow sunk a little with the added load and thrashed a moment in terror, thought she was being pulled down by a gator. Then she continued on. The dog stood up and growled like a lion, stiff standing hackles, stiff muscles, teeth uncovered as he lashed up his fury for the charge. Tea Cake split the water like an otter, opening his knife as he dived. The dog raced down the backbone of the cow to the attack, and Janie screamed and slipped far back on the tail of the cow, just out of reach of the dog's angry jaws. He wanted to plunge in after her, but dreaded the water somehow. Tea Cake rose out of the water at the cow's rump and seized the dog by the neck. But he was a powerful dog, and Tea Cake was overtired. So he didn't kill the dog with one stroke, as he had intended. But the dog couldn't free himself either. They fought, and somehow he managed to bite Tea Cake high up on his cheekbone once. The cow, relieved of a great weight, was landing on the fill with Janie before Tea Cake stroked in and crawled weakly upon the fill again. Janie began to fuss around his face where the dog had bitten him, but he said it didn't amount to anything. He'd have raised hell, though, if he had grabbed me an inch high and bit me in my eye. You can't buy eyes in a store, you know. He flopped to the edge of the fill as if the storm wasn't going on at all. "Let me rest a while. Then I've got to make it on into town somehow." It was next day by the sun and the clock when they reached Palm Beach. It was years later by their bodies. Winters and winters of hardship and suffering. The wheel kept turning round and round. Hope, hopelessness, and despair. But the storm blew itself out as they approached the city of refuge. Havoc was there with her mouth wide open. Back in the Everglades, the wind had romped among lakes and trees. In the city, it had raged among houses and men. Tea Cake and Janie stood on the edge of things and looked over the desolation.
How can I find a doctor for your face in all this mess?
Janie wailed. Ain't got the damn doctor to study about. Us needs a place to rest. A great deal of their money and perseverance, and they found a place to sleep. It was just that. No place to live at all, just sleep. Tea Cake looked all around and sat heavily on the side of the bed. Well, he said humbly, reckon you never expected to come to this when you took up with me, did you?
Once upon a time, I never expected nothing, Tea Cake, but being dead from the standing still and trying to laugh. But you come along and made something out of me. So I'm thankful for anything we come through together. Thank you, ma'am.
You was twice noble to save me from that dog.
TK, I don't expect you seeing his eyes like I did. He didn't aim to just bite me, TK. He aimed to kill me stone dead. I'm never to forget them eyes. He wasn't nothing all over but pure hate. Wonder where he come from.
Yeah, I seen him too. It was frightening. I didn't mean to take his aid neither. He had to die or me one. My switchblade said it was him. Poor me, he tore me to pieces if it wasn't for you, honey. You don't have to say if it wasn't for me, baby, because I'm here. And then I want you to know it's a man here.
And then again, him with the square toes had gone back to his house. He stood once more and again in his high, flat house without sides to it and without a roof, with his soulless sword standing upright in his hand. His pale white horse had galloped over waters and thundered over land. The time of dying was over. It was time to bury the dead.
Jenny, us been in this dirty, slouchy place 2 days now, and that's too much. Us got to get out of this house and out of this man's town. I never did like round here.
Where we going, TK?
That we don't know. Maybe we could go back up to state if you want to go.
I didn't say that, but if that is what you...
No, I said nothing of the kind. I was trying not to keep you out of your comfortable, you know, no longer you wanted to stay.
If I'm in your way...
Will you listen to this woman? Me about to bust my bridges trying to stay with her, and she here. She ought to be sharp with tacks.
All right, then. You name something, and we'll do it. We can give it a poor man's trial, anyhow.
Anyhow, I done got rested up, and the bedbugs done got too bold around here. I didn't notice when my wrist was broke. I'm going out and look around and see what we can do. I'll give anything a common trial.
You better stay inside this house and get some rest. There ain't nothing to find out there no how.
But I wants to look and see, Janie. Maybe it's some kind of work for me to help do.
What they want you to help do, you ain't gonna like it. They's grabbing all them in folks they can get their hands on and make them help bury the dead. The claims they's after the unemployed, but they ain't being too particular about whether you's employed or not. You stay in this house. The Red Cross is doing all that can be done otherwise for the sick and afflicted.
I got money on me, Janie. They can't bother me. Anyhow, I wants to go see how things is showing up. I wants to see if I can hear anything about the boys from the Glades. Maybe they all come through all right. Maybe not.
Tea Cake went out and wandered around, saw the hand of horror on everything. Houses without roofs and roofs without houses. Steel and stone, all crushed and crumbled like wood.
the mother of malice, had trifled with men. While Tea Cake was standing and looking, he saw two men coming towards him with rifles on their shoulders, two white men. So he thought about what Janie had told him and flexed his knees to run. But in a moment, he saw that wouldn't do him any good. They had already seen him, and they were too close to miss him if they shot. Maybe they would pass on by. Maybe when they saw he had money, they would realize he was not a tramp. "Hello there, Jim," the tallest one called out. "We've been looking for you." "My name ain't no Jim," Tea Cake said watchfully. "What you been looking for me for? I ain't done nothing." "That's what we want you for, not doing nothing. Come on, let's go bury some of these here dead folks. They ain't getting buried fast enough." Tea Cake hung back defensively. "What I got to do with that? I'm a working man with money in my pocket. Just got blowed out of the glades by the storm." The short man made a quick move with his rifle. "Get on down the road there, sir. Don't look out. Somebody will be burying you. Go on in front of me, sir." Tea Cake found that he was part of a small army that had been pressed into service to clear the wreckage in public places and bury the dead. Bodies had to be searched out, carried to certain gathering places, and buried. Corpses were not just found in wrecked houses. They were under houses, tangled in shrubbery, floating in water, hanging in trees, drifting under wreckage. Trucks lined with drag kept rolling in from the glades and other outlying parts, each with its load of 25 bodies. Some bodies fully dressed, some naked, and some in all degrees of dishevelment. Some bodies with calm faces and satisfied hands. Some dead with fighting faces and eyes flung wide open in wonder. Death had found them watching, trying to see beyond seeing. Miserable, sullen men, black and white under guard, had to keep on searching for bodies and digging graves. A huge ditch was dug across the white cemetery, and a big ditch was opened across the black graveyard. Plenty quicklime on hand to throw over the bodies as soon as they were received. They had already been unburied too long. The men were making every effort to get them covered up as quickly as possible, but the guards stopped them. They had received orders to be carried out.
"Hey there, y'all! Don't dump them bodies in the hole like that. Examine every last one of them, find out if they's white or black. Us got to handle them slow like that? God have mercy. In the condition they in, got to examine them? What difference do it make about the color? They all need bearing in a hurry. Got orders from headquarters. They making coffins for all the white folks. 'Tain't nothing but cheap pine, but that's better than nothing. So don't dump no white folks in the hole just so. What to do about the colored folks? Got boxes for them too? Nope. They can't find enough of them to go around. Just sprinkle plenty of quicklime over them and cover them up. Shucks, nobody can't tell nothing about some of these bodies the shape they're in. Can't tell whether it is white or black."
The guards had a long conference over that. After a while, they came back and told the men,
"Look at the hair when you can't tell no other way. And don't let me catch none of y'all dumping white folks. And don't be wasting no boxes on colored. It's too hard to get hold of right now."
"They's mighty particular how these dead folks goes to judgment," Tea Cake observed to the man working next to him. "Look like they think God don't know nothing about the Jim Crow law." Tea Cake had been working several hours when the thought of Janie worrying about him made him desperate. So when a truck drove up to be unloaded, he bolted and ran. He was ordered to halt on pain of being shot at, but he kept right on and got away. He found Janie sad and crying, just as he had thought. They calmed each other about his absence. Then Tea Cake brought up another matter. "Janie, us got to get out of this house and out of this man's town. I don't mean to work like that no more."
No, Tea Cake. Let's stay right in here until it's all over. If they can't see you, they can't bother you."
"Oh, no. Supposing they come around searching. Let's get out of here tonight."
"Where's going, Tea Cake?"
The quickest place is the Glades. Let's make it on back down there. This town is full of trouble and compelment.
But Tea Cake, the hurricane was down in the Glades, too. It'll be dead folks to be buried down there, too.
Yeah, I know, Janie, but it could never be like it is here. In the first place, they're bringing bodies out of there all day, so it can't be but so many more to find. And then again, it never was as many there as it was here. And then too, Janie, the white folks down there knows us. It's bad being strange niggas with white folks. Everybody's against you.
That sure is the truth. The one the white man know is nice colored folks. The ones he don't know is bad niggas. Janie said this and laughed, and Tea Cake laughed with her. Janie, I done watched it time and time again. Each and every white man think he knows all the good darkies already. He don't need to know no more. So far as he's concerned, all them he don't know ought to be tried and sentenced to 6 months behind the United States Privy House at Hard Smelling.
How come the United States Privy House, Tea Cake? Well, you know, old Uncle Sam always do have the biggest and the best of everything. So the white man figured that anything less than the Uncle Sam's consolidated water closet would be too easy. So I means to go where the white folks know me. I feels like a motherless child around here.
They got things together and stole out of the house and away. The next morning, they were back on the muck. They worked hard all day fixing up a house to live in so the Tea Cake could go out looking for something to do the next day. He got out soon next morning, more out of curiosity than eagerness to work. Stayed off all day. That night he came in beaming out with light.
Who you reckon I seen, Janie? Bet you can't guess. I bet you a fat man you seen sop the bottom. Yeah, I seen him and stew beef and dockery and lies and cootie man booty. Guess who else?
Lot knows. Is it Starrett?
No, he got caught in the rush. Lies helped bury him in Palm Beach. Guess who else?
Oh, go on, Tea Cake. I don't know. Can't be Motorboat.
That's just who it is. Old Motor. The son of a gun laid up in that house and slept, and the lake come moved the house way off somewhere, and Motor didn't know nothing about it till the storm was about over.
No!
Yeah, man. Here we nearly kill our fools still running away from danger, and him lay up there and sleep and float on off.
Well, you know, they say luck is a fortune.
That's right, too. Look, I got a job of work, help clearing up things in general, and then they gonna build that dike sure enough. That ground got to be cleared off, too. Plenty of work. They needs more men, even.
So Tea Cake made 3 hearty weeks. He bought another rifle and a pistol, and he and Janie bucked each other as to who was the best shot, with Janie ranking him always with the rifle. She could knock the head off a chicken hawk sitting up in a pine tree. Tea Cake was a little jealous, but proud of his pupil. About the middle of the 4th week, Tea Cake came home early one afternoon complaining of his head. Sick headache that made him lie down for a while. He woke up hungry. Janie had his supper ready, but by the time he walked from the bedroom to the table, he said he didn't believe he wanted a thing.
"Thought you told me you was hungry," Janie wailed.
"I thought so, too," Tea Cake said very quietly and dropped his head in his hands.
"But I done baked you a pan of beans."
"I know they's good all right, but I don't choose nothing now."
"Thank you, Janie."
He went back to bed. Way in the midnight, he woke Janie up in his nightmarish struggle with an enemy that was at his throat. Janie struck a light and quieted him.
"What's the matter, honey?" she soothed and soothed. "You got to tell me so I can feel with you. Let me bear the pain along with you, baby. What hurt you, sugar?"
"Something got after me in my sleep, Janie," he all but cried. "Tried to choke me to death. Hadn't been for you, I'd be dead."
"You sure was straining with it. But you's all right, honey. I'm here."
He went on back to sleep, but there was no getting around it. He was sick in the morning. He tried to make it, but Janie wouldn't hear of his going out at all.
If I can just make out in the week, Tea Cake said. Folks was making weeks before you was born, and they're going to be making them after you's gone. Lay back down, Tea Cake. I'm going to get the doctor to come see about you.
Oh, ain't that bad, Janie. Look at here. I can walk all over the place.
But you's too sick to play with. Plenty of fever around here since the storm.